Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 154, Standing Rock Shift, a conversation with Dave Archambault Sr. Dave Archambault Sr. is best known as the Indian School Whisperer, a.k.a. Joe Buckinghorse. He has been a voice for future generations by advocating empowerment, schooling models for Indian learners of all ages. He earned a master's degree from Penn State and has headed the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, American Indian College Fund, Sitting Bull College, with experience as tribal councilman, school superintendent, principal, and currently sits on a BIE grant school and Fort Yates Public School Board, and is the chairman of the board for the American Indian Business Leaders Organization. He's also the father of the Standing Rock Sioux Chairman Dave Archambault Jr. People are aware of what's going on. Dakota Access Pipeline, Energy Transfer Corporation trying to put a pipeline under the Missouri River and elsewhere, and this would have adverse effects for 17 million people downstream and the native peoples, and Standing Rock is the focal point. So we're gonna hear more about that. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. Welcome, Dave Archambault Sr. to Between the Lines. Thanks so much for giving some of your time here to talk with me. I read some of your articles online, and I emailed you. You emailed me back. That doesn't happen every day. You're writing about what's going on in Standing Rock, and you're giving some information about that's not out there in hardly any other news about micro bugs that could affect the pipelines and cause trouble, about the benzene and other chemicals in the oil. And you're talking about the sacredness of water to all the native people there. So, anything along those lines, you want to just kind of jump in and give people a sense of what it's like there, and what people are in other parts of the world. It's sort of like, oh, some natives are trying to stop a pipeline, but it's way more than that, right?
Well, yeah. I think it has such importance for America. This is just one pipeline, and it should be the last one that was ever put in the ground. That's the way we see it. And if America could ever take that step, and we hope that this might be the step that's taken to broaden some awareness about the dangers of these lines. There's 2.5 million acres of pipelines in America, and we're worried about on our reservation is that our water is going to be threatened by them, and that's just a fact of the matter. They say when you talk to the Army Corps of Engineers, you talk to state officials in the oil industry, you talk to the newspapers, you talk to especially a company like DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline owners, you know, they all say there's virtually no danger of that harming the land or the water, and that is just simply not true.
Yeah.
It's just simply not true. That's what we're up against. That's what we feel that we are. We have to stand against that. That is not a true statement. The fact of the matter is that these pipes that they put in the ground are welded, and where they are welded, that's the weakest point. From just the integrity of the pipe, putting something in the ground, but the pipe is where the two pipes join, and that right there will corrode and breach, rupture first, and that does decay rather quickly at a welding spot. There's a seam all the way down a pipe that is kind of like it's a flat sheet of metal that if you flip it over and you bend it, turn it, you flip that flat sheet forward like a piece of paper, you can make a tube out of it. And where that meets, there's a weld all the way there. So that's the way they come. That gives out. And then there's also those ones where once you have the tube, you put the two tubes together, then you weld right there. Those things will give. And then that's a big piece of what ruptures and what gives in pipelines. The other thing is that there are these what they call mix, microbiologically induced corrosion is what it's called, a mix. But that, in essence, what that means is that there are super bugs. There are bugs that begin coating the inside of the tube, and then they build. They actually eat
amazing
steel. That's a fact. That's a dang fact. That no matter what that does, so it causes corrosion. And so where they get going pretty good, after a time, they corrode a pipe, and that's where the breaches come from, the welds and that corrosion that goes on with these superbugs. And they're also put under tremendous pressure, the stress that is there. There's two things that cause the breaches. One is there's pumping stations every so many miles that that move the oil through the tube to its destination. And so you can imagine that there are hills and valleys and all that goes from our North Dakota, northern North Dakota, clear to Illinois. So it's got to go underneath this river is what they're planning on. And it goes under other places. It goes up hills. And so it has to be pushed. And so they have to put it under tremendous pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And where the wells get weak, so they always say, you know, like a chain is only as strong as its strongest link or its weakest link.
Right.
And that's what the pipeline is. It's with all these wells that go along, they break. The EPA did a study, and they are estimating that they breach, rupture, and leak 20 times, over 20 times a day. There's 7,000, almost 8,000 breaches every year.
Amazing.
And that's the low end. That is the figure because you got to understand, to protect themselves from public outcry, they try to suppress this as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't know how significant the problem is, and it is a problem. So we can just say that America, over time, it could be devastated in a very big way by oil ruptures and pipelines in the ground. So that's just our little. We become aware of that up here. Our Indian people. So we're against this pipeline because we don't want our water to be damaged. There's a possibility that, like they say, we're not sure when, but we're pretty certain, and certainly nobody can guarantee us that it won't happen. They can't. They literally cannot guarantee us that it won't happen. So our tribe has put up a significant battle. We have a great understanding of water. No more special relationship in as Lakota people, Sioux type people,
mm-hmm.
with water, but is anybody else, but everybody else understands the importance of it. But I just tell you that it's a beautiful understanding really, really significant. We understood well that everything springs from water.
Right.
It's we call it mini wichone. It's a substance of life. It's everything has to have it. And certainly, as from our point of view, as living on a prairie, we had a great understanding of this. You know, it's like if you're at sea, if you're on one of the oceans, you got to have water. And you see these stories of people that live, that somehow something happens to them, and they're on the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, wherever you want, Indian Ocean, whatever it is. But if they're out there without water, they have a hell of a time. It's a hell of a story for those that survive it. Well, we have a sea, only thing it's prairie.
Mm.
If you can imagine, if you lived out on a prairie here, you would be every bit as inundated without water as anybody else is, just as much as anybody, because you're between water holes or what water sources. You're out walking on a prairie, and you have to move out there, and our people used to walk. So we were very conscious of water, how important it was to our horses, to everything we saw. We took a special acute notice of how important it was for life to have water. You have to have water. So our most significant ceremony is the sun dance.
Right.
And at that sun dance, in the middle of the arbor, the thing that you pray to, and you you sacrifice yourself for the people, you suffer for 4 days and four nights without food and water, is you, in the middle that where you're brought forward and you're focused on is a cottonwood tree. Hmm. And that cottonwood tree is symbolic of water. Where in our, for our people, when we were traveling our universe out on the prairie, we were constantly looking for the cottonwood tree, because where you found cottonwood tree, you found water or life.
Right.
So you traveling, you know, if you travel 50 miles walking in a whole village moving, you're looking for water. You got to be better. Your horse is going to need it. Everybody needs it. So you're looking for it. And then when you see the cottonwood, it's like, oh, there it is. We're going to make it, you know? So they, we had a very special, relationship. And I think some of the things I've talked about is, you know, how significant. There are seven rites that we have as described by Black Elk.
Uh-huh.
And if you just, it's a book, it's very popular. There's one book called Black Elk Speaks. It's one of the most widely read books around. And then there's also another book where another author sat with him and learned about our seven rites. But every one of these things, every one of them talk about water. And so I'm just trying to describe the significance and importance to the Lakota people of water. And so our people living on our reservation, on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, where they're putting that pipeline is 500 feet away. So that's like, you know, something like 125 steps, if you're thinking. From where you're standing right now, just think, if I took 25 steps, that's about how far away that dangerous thing is. We call it a snake.
Right.
the guys, they joke around with my son. He's the chairman of the tribe.
Uh-huh.
And they call it, now they, you know, it does, our Indian people really have a good sense of humor, and they joke around a lot. And they were calling him the snake killer, you know. And I hope he is, you know. I don't know if he'll be it or not. But that's what we have. We have legends. But we also have stories of people going to the other side and visiting with relatives that have passed away.
Right.
And they're talking about, they're warning us of a black snake. So as such, you know, the black snake being oil, that it's a killer.
Right.
And, you know, you can really take that in a metaphorical way, that honest to God, fossil fuels, which that snake, you can say, it represents the use of fossil fuels, is, you know, just it, the fact of the matter is, it's just not good for the planet Earth. the way we use it, it's got death stuff written all over it. It's dark.
Yeah.
And we just don't seem to, in America, and we're the ones, we are the country in America that leads, everybody in the world. Everybody, we have a standard of life. And I really feel fortunate that, in many, many, many ways that I've been able to, be in an era, and I tell my kids, there's just nobody nobody in the history of time has gone through a period of time that me personally have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
When I was real little, I seen, this was in Rapid City, my mother moved there, and I was just a varmint, now just barely, cutting around like that. But I do remember, our Indian people, we'd walk over. My mother never had a car. Our family never had a car. Our father left us, so there was four of us. So anyway, we'd walk over to the Oshkosh camp, they called it. This was in Rapid City. This is a poor, if you could imagine, a poor ghetto. This is where all the real poor, dilapidated buildings were. You could still even see people in wall tents.
Hmm.
By Walt, I mean, it looks like a military tent, if you know what that looked like. What it was.
A little bit.
It looked like that. And then there was buckboards. There were still people in buckboards. And this was in about the early 1950s. So I was right on the tail end of that era when horses were depended on for transportation and work and everything. There were cars coming around like this, but that was still there. And then... imagine what I've gone through now. I've gone through the Beatles, shot at the moon, demonstrations, computers, which I use a lot,
Yeah.
But this era that I'm in right now, that is from the time when I was a little tiny guy to now, my kids, it's a hell of a swing. So I feel pretty fortunate in many, many ways, but also I feel, I also see the reality of the situation too, and I do want America to be the best. It's our land. Our Indian people have lost it. It was stolen in many ways, but that's history.
Mm-hmm.
So we are here now. So we got to make a go of it. And I would love to see our land taken care of in a good, responsible way. So we've gone forward in technology. America has, but they'd say if you've ever read anything by Peter Farb, it's a book about man's rise to civilization. This was written a while ago, and one of the books that influenced me. But
okay,
we just got to take things in stride and say, that we need America to start, should be working at leading the world in a good way. Right now, we're leading in oil. Fossil oil production and the use and a mindset where you can take whatever you want and do with whatever you want for money and you're okay. God's with you. God bless you. All that kind of stuff. And if you've made a lot of money, as a matter of fact, have great standing in America.
Yeah.
And so they the owners of oil companies, they think they're in good standing, but in actuality, we should be thinking about this is how do we use our intellects? How do we, as an Indian person, I say, I hope that my people and the non-Indians and people of all races can come and start thinking this over good and start taking care of things. Because if we just keep this up, they got a thing called climate change, climate changing on us and all that. So
yeah,
it's all tied to this. Yeah, so we just... look at that thing changing in America, using their wits and their means and their intelligence to start moving in a different way. And that's easily done, I think. Not easily done, but I think we've got it right now. We've got cars that run on electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many significant things that can be done. We just got to move that way. Taking the energy, it costs a whole bunch to do wind generation, so it's kind of, they say it's prohibitive, but we should not look at that like that.
Exactly, exactly.
We should just say we got it. Well, if that's what it takes to get away from, to help out everything, then let's be the leader in how do you do this clear across the board. You know, what is it that, I for one don't like those big fans, the big generators, the wind generators.
Okay.
I don't, they're kind of unsightly, but I think there's other means, there is wind. I've seen other technologies that can use the wind. So, you know, with whether you like it or not, or else, you know, you put them someplace out of the sight and transmit it or whatever, but we really should look at that technology. And solar, we haven't even touched that yet. There's so much energy in the sun, and it transmits to the world.
Right.
And we should be really enhancing that. You know, like we can use transformers to even enhance the electricity make it just as strong at these stations. Well, we should be able to even do that to the sun, the energy of the sun,
right,
and do everything. So, you know, I want the best. I just pray that somebody's going to listen to us at some point in time.
Yeah. Like I know people, I'm praying for that every day, as much as I can, and telling people about it. And what you mentioned about the amazement of this time, I think you're touching on the key thing. It seems like a time when there has to be this new balance with the technology, like the new, quote, new technology, and the old, you know, what I love about learning about native ways is like these old traditions, these ancient traditions. It's like a time for this some kind of blending, you know, for those two to get along, because otherwise, you know, the greed of the oil industry and is just, you know, has to stop. So, I don't know how the consciousness shifts that where people start welcoming this blend of things, but that seems to me a lot of what's going on with the, you know, what the water protectors are doing. And the other thing while you're talking about water is that this, maybe it's connected with the shift in consciousness, because, you know, where I'm at in a suburban area, and people, it's like, you know, they bring water to their car when they go leave their house. They drive a mile, there's a 7-Eleven, they can get water. It's like it's a whole different consciousness, but I think because of what the people are doing out there, it's waking up people's awareness that, you know, that how precious the water is. So
I'd hope so.
You know, I mean, any idea of how the kind of, you know, you think the consciousness has to change first before, or is it like the greed thing to get, you know, somehow get the industry shift so that, you know, that this enemy of the corporate, you know, could actually be making some money, you know, on some other energies as maybe a way to appease them. I don't know if that's possible. That's how I think about it.
Well, you know, it's the guys in D.C., you got to pray for them guys, you know, because they're the ones who call the shots, and they're the ones that make the laws for, you know, set the tone for America. And so, you know, they are lobbied big time.
Right.
And so that's the advantage that these people have, to go and, you know, grease the skids for something that they want. Going to D.C. and these politicians say, yeah, I'm going to do this or that, and I know. Then when they get elected and they get in there, then pretty soon they say, this is what we always hear, American Indians. Yeah, you know, they always say, well, vote for us, we'll go help you, we'll help you with this and that. Then they get in and say, yeah, I know, I said that. I know, but I got these other constituents. But I, you know, this is their song line. They always say, but I guarantee you, I will get to it. I have that down. But then you never see it. You know, they placate you to death. You know. Yeah. But anyway, that is those are the boys that can do this for us. And you know, every now and then you hear these politicians that are come out and you say, oh my God, you know, we got a crack at this. You know, Bernie Sanders was one.
Right.
And he was, I think, pretty widely respected, but, you know, it's like, he was a hindrance, to the Democratic Party,
right,
for Hillary. And so, she got the nomination, and she said she's gonna, you know, work with him and his voters. But, you know, to date, you know, he's the only politician, or the other candidates, they kind of know what's wrong, what's right. And this just kind of gives you a beat on America, is they are afraid to say they're for what, against this pipeline, Hillary and especially Donald.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, that would threaten them if they say.
Right.
So there's a fear. I just tell you right now, we know where we stand.
Right.
In America, right now, I'll tell you right now, in that they will not say anything. In that, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, those guys will not carry the story.
I know.
It tells you where we are. You know, and it really hurts. Even though these people know. I know they know we're on the moral high ground, and it's right what we're doing, but it's like, God dang those Indians, you know, you know, son of a gun, you know, we just can't do that. They got these guys, with a lot of money down in Texas. They got them up in Canada, and they're the ones. And boy, you know, we just, if we don't do this, then there's a lot of industry in North Dakota and across the states, and it will harm us. That's what they're saying. It's a national security. It is not. It is not. But that's what they got the power to put it out there. They got the power to do the advertisements, and they got the power to buy, you know, all this stuff, and buy people off and all kinds of, it's, you know, I just hate to say that kind of stuff, but that's really what I know what we're up against.
Yeah.
We don't have money. I wish we had millions of dollars to put out the story. I would love to put out, and not, I wouldn't attack anybody, but I would just try to, just kind of like what I'm saying now, is just try to put out a good story, our point of view.
Right.
To help people, you know, but a lot of times the American political system is all bashing the other person. I try not to do that as a personal. I know it's bad. I just know it just doesn't do any. I always say, you know, don't say anything but about it unless you could say it to their face. And and I honestly, right on our issue, I'll tell somebody to their face. I don't care who it is, a politician or who it is. What you got is wrong, man. It's not good. So I'm not afraid of that one. But I don't want to, you know, use tactics, you know. But I wish we could work it out. I wish we could, honest to God, sit down and work something out with this.
That's the thing, yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, just the forum to have some discussion, because like you said, the media gets so controlled, and at least thanks to some of the social media, like you just sent me your new article about Shailene Woodley, you know, she got, because she's well known, at least, you know, it got out there on the media, so it's like all these small avenues are what's available that is helping. It's making a lot more people around the world aware, so that's certainly a positive. So your articles, they're mostly at Indian Country Today, and the first time I found you was on IndiansWithAZ.com. Is that the best place for people to keep up with what you're writing?
I just sent it to mainly people. I've sent it to other outlets, but I don't know who prints them myself. But every now and then I get, you know, people, I get people call me up and email, such as you email me and so forth, you know, and then I just tell people, go ahead, just, they want to print it, go ahead, you know,
right.
I that's fine. But mainly it is on the Indian newspapers locally around here, and on the Indian reservations around here. So, but that, they're the only ones who run it. It kind of hurts people. For instance, the Bismarck paper up there, they got to be very careful. They don't want to, they can't write too much of what I say.
Right.
They just can't, you know. And I understand it. You know, the guy's got a job and he lives in the community, and pretty soon they'll be saying, "Ah, you're an Indian lover." God dang Indian lover. So they can't. So he's got to be very. He's printed some of my stuff, but he's got to be very guarded about it. He'll take heat for it, the editors, you know. But I write all my, how I got started is with the Mobius Tribune.
Okay.
They asked me to write some stuff, so I did. So, and that's a, you know, that's a, right off the reservation. And so I write articles for them, I don't know, once a month or so, something like that, for about a year now.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And it just goes more. But I do cover all kinds of topics, you know, like, for instance, I just don't see the relevancy or the good of algebra, our kids on reservation. Not that they shouldn't have it, those that want it, but I'd say, you know, in Georgetown, the study that they do for the workforce, they're well known for the studying workforce studies, and that's what algebra is, the thing that stops most kids from going to college. But anyway, what the other side of this is, what else can you do? You know, because the professors and they've made it through it, so somebody that's done something, they say why can't they do it? I did it. So, but with some people, it's generally hard for them to do. A whole lot of people aren't very successful, and then you just don't use it in your lifetime. It's just not practical. But the other thing is that if they say, well, the reason why we require it is it helps the human being think ahead steps, plan and strategize and stuff like that. So it's so important. And so I say, okay, I can dig that. I'd like to have every human being with that skill, ability. Let's do chess then.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good idea.
Let's do chess. Chess is far better than, you know, instead of having an algebra class, they should be teaching and having chess tournaments, and every student should be required. And of course, you'll have some that don't want them, but then it's a game. But it very much the same thing, puts the mind through the same exercises of thinking ahead, of taking steps. Mm-hmm. What happens if I do this? What happens if I do that? What happens? And that's what they say algebra is good for. Okay, I can dig it, but if there's a better way to get that through your brain, let's do that then. And I'd say that's what we should. So I just write a lot of different types of articles,
right,
from my spin. And that's an example of one, you know.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I love the blend. You know, it's such a blend of you've got the scientific facts, and you've got the, you know, the respect for nature and human beings, and then, you know, you've got the sense of the prophecies and the deeper sense. So you combine them all, and it's just I found it refreshing. It's very clear reading. It's understandable, and you know, you just giving it real clear. So that's part of why I first emailed you. I'm proof. I remember studying math in high school. I think I was like an A student, and then I forget, but it was like maybe trigonometry I got a B, and then algebra I got a C, and then by the time I got to calculus, I think I got a D, and I gave up because it was right about, you know, it didn't have any practicality for me. So, but hey, maybe it helps someone who maybe, you know, wants to build something, I guess. But let me see. I wanted to also ask you, because as far as, like you mentioned, chess, like what kind of moves can people make here? Can they? You had mentioned to me previously about writing to Congress. People know they can send supplies, because I was just reading about the winter coming up, and you know, the prayers. That's something. You know, is there any other ideas you have? That, because I know there's a lot of people that do want to help, and they're kind of like, well, what can I do?
Well, you know, I'd say, speaking for my son, who was, we were just at a leader of the Osheti Shakoi meeting, all the tribes were there with their leadership at Wakbashicha, which means it's Pier, Fort Pier.
Okay.
There's a bad river there. Our people call it the bad river because, you know, they live by water, okay? So they're camped there, and when in the Black Hills, they would have a flood, or there'd be a big rainstorm over there, and then that water would come rampaging down that river, and you could hear it coming, and you better run for your life, you know, because there was a flood coming. But there would be like no storm, you know, but then this water would be coming from the Black Hills down this river. So they call it the Bad River. But anyway, at that river, we had a meeting, I think it was Monday night, and, you know, just going over, just telling you what they were talking about. But the number one thing he said there, and when he got back, he talked to the same, to the council, the leaders of our tribe, and he said, the number one thing that we've got to do is prayer.
Okay.
He said that's everybody. if you want to study, he said, so far, everything that we can say that we've gotten to this point where this juncture where we are have stopped the pipeline. And it's because I think people in America and around the world are praying for this.
Right.
And so that's very, very significant. And there's, you know, I just can't express that enough. I just think that those prayers mount up and they become apparent in another human being's brain more significantly. For instance, that judge or the congressman,
right,
or these, even the pipeline owners, we're at it's prayer. So that's another way. If I could talk to anybody, I'd say, you know, just start asking the Creator, or however you identify the guy or the woman.
Right.
You know, say it. You know, just say that. You know, pray for that. And I think that would be. But outside of that, you know, there are tangible things that you can do.
Right.
You know, and that's picking up the phone, and you know, they say when you contact a senator or a congressman, that represents 10,000 people. I don't know if people know that, understand that, but that the studies that they've done is that when they get a point of view from somebody that represents a whole bunch of people that think like that. So the more contacts they're getting, say if 10 people call them on this thing, that represents 100,000 people.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the more we can get people to start calling them, writing them, contacting them, and, you know, if they come through town and ask them like Obama, you know, Obama, he was in Laos, for heaven's sakes, and up to that time, he turned away from us, from Indian people, and he came to this reservation, and he'd said a lot of really good things, so we were really disappointed, you know. We understand he's in a lot of pressure and right, all that, but he hadn't said a word about us. And here, there was a student
right,
in Laos that said, "President Obama, what do you think about that situation in Standing Rock?" And he stammered, and he bailed out on the question.
Oh,
he realized, well, I have to ask him. He knew damn well. I'll just say he knew dang good and well. He wasn't prepared with he has to say it very politically,
right,
very politically correct. So he couldn't say the deal. So anyway, but he had to come back. They put him on the spot worldwide. So he came back, and there shortly after that, he came through. So that contacting people can make, you know, if he gets put on the spot, I would love to see Hillary or even Donald Trump put on the spot like that.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, that means a lot. That tells, if she was to answer the thing, right now, I think they're going to debate tonight, but let's just say in the coming weeks, if somebody point blanks her on that thing, what do you think about that situation where the Native Americans are protesting and they're against fossil fuel? Do you think that's a good thing, Hillary?
Yeah, that'd be great. Good, right to the point.
You know, then you got, yeah, then you're gonna, then she's gonna have to say something. And you know, that it that would put her in her, it, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it really matters if she would say she was for us. But there's a whole bunch of people that are, I think, waiting on their, sitting on the edge of their chairs. And leaders like Bernie Sanders that's sitting there, when are they going to come on us? When are they going to start? When are they going to break it? Donald Trump, of course, I think, I don't know if you know the rhetoric, but he's pretty well anti-Indian.
Okay, yeah.
Apparently, maybe he will. Well, he isn't. I don't know for sure, but just what we know so far, he is.
Right.
He is against him. I know he was at this American pageant. This was years ago, and we had a young Indian woman who was a contestant towards, you know, that was from South Dakota, and she was American Indian, and he just left the room.
Amazing.
There were five of them in there.
Amazing.
And he didn't want to be dealing with this.
Yeah, I think there was five senators, including, Feinstein, Leahy, and Sanders. I forgot the other two. There was five senators that made some suggestion about to Obama to stop the pipeline. So at least, you know, there's some kind of, it's sort of like I think of that tipping point, you know, where just people keep chipping away. And I remember Pete Seeger saying that, something like Pete Seeger used to say there's like a seesaw, and you just keep putting a little sand or something on one side, and, you know, eventually it's going to swing the other way. So,
Well, most certainly, you know, that is very significant, very, very significant. And then there, I don't know, I think there's 18 House of Representatives. As a matter of fact, three of them came here to our reservation, and they were on the House side, you know. And even though there's 18, there's about 500 of them guys over there, you know, the global population, and we just don't have very many. They signed the paperwork or whatever it is, announcing that they were supporting us as well. And that is significant. Of course, they, you know, that's run by the Republicans, and they just don't hear that. You know, it's threatening to their base, you know, their money, so they just can't be there. I think they all know it, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they all know the danger that's in, that they're messing around with. So I just say, you know, that maybe we can. It'll come, and there'll be a shift, and we start moving away from it. And I see it's coming. I see a little bit of it here, not enough, though, but maybe we can be the big thing here at Standing Rock, the ones that do it. But there is a big winter coming.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it is cold up here in the wintertime, and I live up here, you know, and I don't know if I'd want to stay outside.
Oh, boy.
To tell you the truth, man, those guys, when I think back of our people living in lodges, tents, teepees, I mean,
right.
Them guys was rock solid, boy. I mean, you had the hell of a constitution to make a go of it. And then smile about it, laugh about it, and, you know, it's just a whole different mental framework that's operating in somebody back in the day. Because me, I live here. This is my reservation. And it'd be really hard for me to live outside in the winter time here, you know.
Yeah.
And here we got a whole bunch of people that are going to do this. They are up there right now. Like, we go over there every day. I got a camp over there.
Mm-hmm.
I got relatives staying over there, and there's a lot of people. They're gonna do it. They're gonna fight this thing out. They're gonna stay out there outside in the cold, and that is no easy task at all. So those people it would be nice, you know, if people could help them. What we would do is the tribe has as they get in money, we have a fellow named Everett Iron Eyes. He's the coordinator for the tribe, working with the campers over there. Understand, the camp is not the tribes, is not the Standing Rock Sioux tribes. They are, the camp is actually on Army Corps land.
Right.
They took this land from us. And so they're there, and we, the tribe, my son and the council, they have no jurisdiction of those people. They can't tell them a thing.
Hmm.
They can't tell them to do anything. They can request. That's about it. And so far, they've asked, you know, for them to, you know, be peaceable and prayerful and all that. So that's about all they can do. And when they come there, but they are considered guests. So we try our best to accommodate them, you know, with water. And I'll share this with you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. There's. You know, like porta potties.
Right.
That's what they're using now, this camp. And, that's working fine. There's 96 of them out there. Cost $67,000 a month.
Amazing.
To service those.
Amazing.
And what's going on now is that those things they work good now, but when it gets cold, when it gets, 15 degrees and a 40 mile an hour wind, you're going way below zero. Wind chill factor is way below. And those porta potties freeze up, and they can't work. They can work if you put antifreeze in them, okay?
Right.
But you can't put you. what you when you can't dump antifreeze in lagoons, you know that you know, because see with the, when you take this when you take the waste out,
right,
you got to put it someplace. So we have a lagoon, but so right now it's working out okay. And but the answer to keep pumping it in the wintertime when it's cold is antifreeze. But we if you do that, then you can't pump it. You can't put it into the lagoon. So we have a real problem there where we're going to have to get, and you can't dig down, you can't drill holes and do an old outhouse type of a thing, because the land, where the land sits now, it floods a lot there. So we're no better than the guys who might spill or will spill oil into the pipe, into the river. And if we put a bunch of outhouses out and then it floods, then we'll be polluting the water. So we can't. So we just gotta, we're gonna have to have tents, larger tents, and then put those things in there, then heat them. Oh, we need a big, we need several big tents, and we just got two in, but we need more of them. These people during the day, you know, if you have a little tiny pup tent, that's fine if you're inside of a bag and you got the wind shut down and you got a couple sleeping bags, but you know, you can't lay there all winter.
Right.
You know, you're gonna have to get up and move around for a lot of reasons. So we have to have a places for them to gather. So we got, you know, we just got to. We they're our guests, and we got to try to accommodate them as best we can. And yet we can't tell them a thing to do. We can't. We cannot. There's a lot of things going on. It is a entity unto itself. For instance, if you went there right now, if you went there, you would be asking the same questions: who's in charge, how do I get this, or whatever the questions you are. There's so there is kind of a loose community,
right,
that's there. And so there's like no stealing, no fighting, or you know, whatever. Those are just, you know, just to be civil, just being civil. There's no sign that says that, but we ask them to be, you know, we're here for a purpose. We're here to pray, and we're here to try to stop this pipeline, and we need to all get along. Basically, that's all. That's what's going on over there, and it's a great feeling. I kid you not. You go there and you just see and all the people there, the Indians from all the different tribes and all the nationalities, the people from all over the place, Ireland. God, they're from everywhere. I just thinking of some of the countries over here, you know, that they're Thailand. There's people come up. Mayans came in the other day from Mexico, South America. They're just coming from all over the place, and they're just committed. You know, they're just saying this is the fight we're going to be in. We're with you. You see that all over the place. Standing Rock, we're standing with Standing Rock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just, it's amazing. We don't know why it happened. I just tell you that all these, we have, yesterday came in was a Cherokee Nation, a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then this weekend there was more, every day, almost every day there's people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this large area that's set up for where would they cook? People donate food. And so we have everybody, when you come, you're expected to come in, be peaceable, work with everybody else, but we would ask you to work, chop wood, and that's up to you, you know, and help out in any way you can, pull security, help out cook food, you know, so they come and, you know, organize. It's just a loose organ, everybody helping everybody else. It's a beautiful thing. Feels so good. People come and they say, I came for a couple of days. That was a month ago.
Yeah.
It's something else.
That's a great role model.
So that's what's going on there.
Great.
They need money. I mean, they need help. And so what people, they send out that how they get money to the tribe is, and this is the best way I could say, I'd say the tribe is the best way to help monetarily.
Okay. Is that, I think I was on the website.
Just standing.
Standingrock.org?
Yeah, standingrock.org. And then you just hit some prompts and they'll tell you how to, and then from that, what we do is our coordinator, Everett Iron Eyes, and we have several people over there that work with the camp. The camp kind of has a camp committee, and then they work with them and try to see what they need and try to get it for them. So right now we're purchasing wood, getting wood, getting them food, trying to, you know, we try to provide at least one good meal a day, right, if not more. And that's a hell of a task. I mean, that's start a meal for, you know, 1,000 people. You got to start in the morning and then try to knock it out at midday.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work goes in that puppy, you know. It's so it's a great thing. And there's people all over the place. The world really is watching this thing.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. Yesterday, the council voted to move it. They voted that
to move
for our tribe, because we can't do it. Yeah, to move the camp onto the reservation.
Oh, okay.
So they got a piece of land, and we're going to try to make it into an example of self-sufficiency,
right,
for the future. So we build a community there that can be a model for anybody in the world to come and say so. That's our goal. And that's going to take some doing, and mm-hmm, it needs some financial support. We'd like to see wind, solar, refuse, all kinds of real cool ways of handling all those kinds of issues,
right,
in a community, living together. So that's what we're going to work to that. So that just happened yesterday. So you need to prepare. There's as cheap as that. But now moving on to the reservation allows the tribe to help in a much bigger way, because we can't do nothing with our help, because they're off the reservation.
Right.
But now if it's moved onto the reservation, which has just got done yesterday, we can have our roads department help out. So for instance, if it snows 2 foot of snow, those people where they are right now are going to be just simply inundated. Just forget about it. They're done. It's going to be hard for anything to get in and out of there. If you got a car in there, forget it. You're not going to get out. Maybe not till spring.
Amazing.
It's just going to, it'd be, so we, but where, if we move it onto the res, we can, plan, you know, how to cope with that situation. And we have equipment to, you know, clear roads, clear up paths or streets or something, whatever. However we plan this,
uh-huh,
this community there, we can throw medical stuff. Our people now, we have the wherewithal to help. Right now, those people are down there pretty much on their own,
mm-hmm,
medical wise.
Yeah.
So now, at first we were down there and we did for a while, and then we were notified that, a lot of these things we just can't do. The Bureau of Indian Affairs said you can't use that money to go down there. That's not on the reservation. It's not helping Indian people. And when they come over here, we get a lot more flexible with this.
It sounds smart. I mean, I think there was just something on Democracy Now! Where I saw there was several women who were talking about, maybe it was the first, you know, child that was born near the camp or on the camp, and you know, talking about that the caring for the children and the water and Mother Earth and how it's all connected. I thank you so much for sharing all this, and that's my prayers, and more people, you know, become aware and see the connection, see how it's, you know, it just makes so much sense to protect the water and stop that pipeline and learn from this example of the community that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, we would like to have it go on to the future where our Indian people can come back and stay there cheap. Because right now it costs money. When our Indian people, when our tribes meet, you got to go to some place and they got to be accommodated. That's usually at hotels,
mm-hmm,
you know, and it costs gas money. So it's very expensive. But if we build a model community, it can go in the future. And even environmentalists could say, hey, you guys come here. It's cheap. You come here. We'll make teepees. We'll make hogans. We'll make igloos. We'll make longhouses. That's what the plan is, to have different types of dwellings where people could come stay.
Excellent. Sounds wonderful.
Be safe.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks so much, Dave. I really, you know, thanks
you
so much. Good, heartfelt thanks for taking the time and sharing all you. And I wish everybody good luck. And it's, you know, it feels like wishing other people good luck, but it also feels, you know, it's this time of consciousness where it's not just wishing somebody else good luck, because as the people there are saying, it affects everybody. So I think that people need to realize, you know, be aware of that more and do whatever they can.
Well, thank you for having me. Sincerely, I appreciate you helping with this this interview and helping us spread the word about what we're doing. And I think it's good medicine for everybody.
All right. You're very welcome, and good luck to everyone. Thanks again, Dave.
Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
You bet. Bye.
And we'll go out with a short track from a new CD by Teocasin Ghost Horse with a whole group of musicians. CD is called Somewhere in There, and this track is called Sunrise Moon.